It's a pleasure to welcome Sandra G this morning to Talking Baseball. Of course, she's a regular contributor to the show. June 13th, the anniversary of Matt Cain's perfect game against the Houston Astros. Sandra G gives you her remembrances of that amazing night.
Hey, Giants fans, this is Sandra G, and I'm talking baseball on KNBR 680 and 104.5. Come with me and let's take a trip down memory lane. The day is June 13th, 2012. Summer had just begun on a cool Wednesday afternoon at AT&T Park. The San Francisco Giants' horse, as he was known to the fan base, Matt Cain, was set to take the mound that evening in the second of a three-game series against the then National League Houston Astros. The night before, in the opening game of the series versus Houston, Madison Bumgarner recorded a W in a 6-3 win with 12 strikeouts, and in the appearance, Bum went yard, hitting the first home run of his career, a sight that, over the years as Giants fans, we would learn was no fluke. Leading up to the June 13th start in his previous six, Cain had recorded 6 wins. It's also worth mentioning that 2 months earlier, in the Giants' home opener of the 2012 season, he tossed a one-hit shutout against the Pirates, where the Giants scored 5. Now, it wasn't a typical pregame at the yard on this day, as PGA golfer Dustin Johnson was in town for the U.S. Open, which was taking place nearby at the city's Olympic Club. Johnson was at the ballpark to throw out the ceremonial first pitch, which he tossed to Sergio Romo, the Giants' resident ceremonial first pitch catcher. And before the game, Johnson was putting on a show, teeing off drives from home plate, and with each swing, he was sending a ball high and deep into McCovey Cove. Cain, an avid golfer, but also the starting pitcher that day, had to do some convincing to join in. Amy G had reported that she asked Boach if Cain had asked for permission before stepping up to the tee, and Boach said, "Not to me, he had to go above me." Amy went on to say that Sabian gave Matt the nod and told him, "One swing, and I'm going to turn my head." So, on his one and only swing off the tee, Cain smashed a laceless, dimpled ball 310 yards into the cove before he took the rubber that night. And it started off smooth for Cain. He was dealing early on to his battery mate Buster Posey, and in the first inning after striking out the first two batters, he flied the third out to Panda, who started off the game at third base. The Giants came up in the bottom of the first, and Melky Cabrera hit a two-run shot, scoring Ryan Theriault and giving the Giants an early lead. Run support for the horse didn't end here, and the Giants continued their parade around the bags and past home plate by scoring in every inning through the fifth. Now, typically around the fourth inning or so is when spectators will begin to take a quiet notice that a team hasn't produced a base runner, and it wasn't until the top of the fifth, when the sun had already set on the city by the bay and the stadium lights had started to shine, that on the TV broadcast, Dave Fleming would subtly mention that the Giants had already had 13 base runners with 8 runs scored. Meanwhile, the Astros had not even had a man reach first. As the Giants continued to score runs in the bottom of 5, Cain helped his own cause. He would go on to score a run after he reached first on a broken bat base hit. Right fielder Gregor Blanco came up next and knocked him in after smacking a home run over the right field wall that fell atop Levi's Landing. As Cain crossed home, this became the only time in Major League Baseball history that a pitcher scored a run in their perfect game, and as it stands now with the Universal DH, this could very well be something we won't ever witness again. In the top of the sixth, with one man down, a very, very loud Chris Snyder fly sent Melky Cabrera back deep to left on a ball that almost made its way out of the yard. And certainly, for some of us, we thought there was more than a chance it was gone off the bat. But with his back almost against the wall, the milkman leapt from the track and made the grab. 17 up and 17 down. Coming into the top of 7, Bochy made a couple defensive replacements and moved Joaquin Arias from short to third, replacing Sandoval, and brought in a young Brandon Crawford to play shortstop. Arias, who hadn't played third base before 2012 season, was now frequenting the hot corner, flashing stellar defense, which was something that would be needed to maintain zeros across Houston's box score. In comparison to, say, an opening day, a playoff game, or even a World Series, there's no enormous buildup to a perfect game. The date isn't circled on anyone's calendar beforehand. There's no extraordinary pregame media frenzy in the clubhouse or the dugout. Ticket stubs don't read opening day, NLDS, CS, or World Series, and the park doesn't have any red, white, and blue bunting hanging from the stadium to mark or celebrate the occasion. Also, the stakes of the game don't begin as comparable to a win-or-go-home series in October. But in the top of the seventh, the stakes for Cain hadn't been higher. He found himself in a full count against Houston's Jordan Schaefer, and on a 3-2 pitch, Schaefer crushed a pitch into the right center field alleyway. Here, Gregor Polanco, fully extended and diving onto the warning track, made one of the greatest, most unbelievable catches any of us had ever seen. A catch that a decade later can still give you chills. As Giants fans, this was our generation's The Catch. After postering what might have been the greatest defensive spectacle ever in a perfect game, Polanco got up, tossed the ball back into the infield, and shook out the dirt from his belt. And from the mound, after tipping his cap to Gregor in right field, number 18 got back to work. In the next at-bat, Jose Altuve gets called out on strikes. Following Altuve, Lowry struck out swinging and ended a very dramatic top of seven. In the eighth inning, J.D. Martinez led off, grounding out to third. Next, Houston's Wallace came up and gave Kane his 14th strikeout of the night. A ground ball to Crawford at short off the bat of Johnson marked the end of the top of eight, 24 up and 24 down. Now, at the top of the ninth, with the entire crowd on their feet and Kane three outs away from perfection, he followed Buster out of the dugout, passing past skipper Bruce Bochy on his way up the steps. The first and second outs of the inning were flyouts to Cabrera and left and counted the 25th and 26th outs of the game. With two down in the ninth, the batter, Castro, came up to the plate and absolutely lined a shot down the third baseline, but still on the infield dirt. Arias quickly moved to his right, gathered a tough hop, and threw a strike to first where Brandon Belt makes the catch. 27 up and 27 down. Matt Kane was perfect. In the 130-year history of Giants baseball, this was the first ever perfect game, and only the 22nd ever perfect game in the history of the major leagues. Kane had etched his name into baseball immortality. In 2012, the Giants were still in the infancy of what would become their dynasty and reign of the 2010s, where, as fans, we would grow accustomed to witnessing greatness, where celebrations ensuing after Buster hugs weren't few or far between. Matt Kane's perfect game began as a typical Wednesday night game in early June at 24 Willie Mays Plaza, and like all baseball games, there's always a chance that you'll see something you've never seen before. But as Giants fans who witnessed or tuned into the perfect game in pitcher or radio, many of us can look back and relate it as somebody would with as much significance as the day a man first walked on the moon. It's that huge. Today, we applaud and we remember where we were, who we were with, the memories, the feelings of anxiety and elation that we shared with strangers, friends, and loved ones. It reminds us of the passion we hold for the Giants and the love we have for America's pastime. We realize how much some things have changed, but also how many have also remained the same. As the game that we know and love changes and evolves, and the discussions of robo-umps entering the big swirl and linger, it's fair to wonder how often will feats such as a perfect game take place in the future. Could they become even more rare than they already are now? Personally, I think Kipe summed it up the best that June 13th night in 2012. He said, "When you see a performance like this, you just kind of shake your head and you marvel." And marvel we did. This has been Sandra G remembering Matt Kane's perfect game on the 10-year anniversary on the home of San Francisco Giants baseball, KNBR 680, the sports leader.